Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcasts. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. This episode is called Ferrari is Red, Red Bull is Blue, No Matter Which Track, Mercedes 1-2. That title supplied on Twitter by Toby. Thank you very much, Toby. I'm your host, Richard Spanners Ready, and I'm joined by Matt Trumpets. How's it going, Matt?
It's going pretty good, as I've managed to do all of the things before the show actually started, which is not always the case.
I finished the race 7 minutes before hitting record. One of those days where I just assumed I would be able to catch up with the race. But for some reason, Now TV didn't have like a distinct program that I could click on demand. So I had to wait for the 6 p.m. replay. And I'm looking at it going, ooh, actually, that's going to be pretty tasty for the 8 p.m. live stream. But I did it. I was still setting up as the race finished. Now then, Matt, overall, not quite as dull as Baku, but could this just be expectation management? Because we all went to Baku going, whoa, you know what happens in Baku, smashing safety cars. Whereas when it comes to Barcelona, we kind of know what we're getting.
Yeah, I'd put this is a classic Barcelona race in that overtaking is difficult. There's not a lot of passing, but I will just put in a plug here for any kind of a timing app, because if you were watching the timings as the race went, it was just, you were constantly going, oh, until, of course, the safety car when everything got chucked up in the air.
Fantastic. Well, then, let's review the Spanish Grand Prix. We are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. We're also joined by Carter extraordinaire Alex Van Gien, who destroyed Kyle Edgypower at the Missed Apex event a couple of weeks ago. And we are also joined by media expert Sarah Nichols. So that's Alex Van Gien and Sarah Nichols joining us on the panel. Jeansy, that's not fair, is it, on Kyle? You two had a fantastic scrap at the Missed Apex event.
It was awesome. I really, really enjoyed it. Because however many events I've been to with Kyle, I've never actually raced at the same way on the same track wheel-to-wheel with Kyle. And we had some fantastic races. I mean, I'll be biased and say that my battle with him and David Hatton in that fifth race was probably one of the best straps of the entire event.
No, absolutely. That is being used as the promo shots for the next event, which we're looking at being on the 21st of September, which is the Singapore Grand Prix weekend. We might mix that in with a live viewing as well, and maybe even a live race review. But yeah, check out the video from the last Missed Apex event at Rye House Kart Raceway, which is available on our YouTube channel. But Jeansy, when it came to qualifying, it was a little bit of a surprise. But for me, is it fair if I say we normally think of Bottas as being 2 or 3 tenths off on ultimate Q3 pace? If he suddenly pops up 6 seconds or 0.6 of a second ahead, you don't immediately assume he's gained nearly a second in pace. You think, oh, what's up there?
Yeah, well, when we got to watch Lewis's lap, that whole first lap, and it was a terrible lap. He was all over the place, especially in sector three. And up until sector three, it was an okay lap. He was only a couple of tenths off. He lost loads and loads of time in that final sector. So we knew that wouldn't be a good lap. Bottas's lap was stunning. I'm taking nothing away from Bottas. It was perfect. It was on the money, made no errors and deserved pole absolutely 100%. And then for the second round of the second round in Q3, there was a whole lot of gravel on the track, so no one improved. I can't remember which corner it was, but it was right on the racing line, so no one was ever going to improve.
Yeah, well, it's interesting about that scruffy lap. He had a real problem coming out of Q2 under the yellow flags. Under the yellow flags, he had not been able to properly recharge his batteries on his in lap at the end of Q2. You know how they send them out just in case or just to get a feel on the soft tires? He hadn't been able to properly recharge his battery, so they put him out first thing into Q3. And as a result, he was, on the one hand, trying to warm the tires, but at the same time trying to go slow enough to recharge the battery pack. And the only run that anyone did well on was that first run, and it was inherently compromised from the beginning.
It seemed like a really messy session anyway. There was lots of traffic all over the circuit for everybody. Everyone was fighting against somebody. I think it must have been Q1 because Stroll was out in Q1, where Max Verstappen comes across Stroll into the chicane. Stroll dives as far out the way as he possibly could. Max gets his lap in, and then when Max is coming past the line, he's told to get out of Stroll's way, and he tells Stroll to henceforth and multiply because he apparently ruined his lap, which I thought was absolutely hilarious. But yeah, there was loads of that going on. But the battery thing, I'm asking a question here because the battery thing surprised me. I thought they can recharge the batteries in the pits. They haven't actually got to go out and do that. So that confused me on that situation.
Okay, well, that wasn't my understanding, but certainly something worth asking Summers about. If someone can fire off a text to him now. Do you have an answer for us, Matt?
Yeah, you cannot recharge batteries in the pits during an open session.
Okay, but even when Hamilton was giving that reason, it was a very half-hearted excuse because I think he knew deep down that that wasn't the reason. Maybe that was a reason why he didn't have as good a shot as he might have hoped for, but he was really scruffy in Q3, and I caught the bit where he was, you know, going over the curbs too hard and getting sideways. I think, Jeansy, once you get sideways in an F1 car on a qualifying lap, you're losing tenths hand over fist. And that wasn't the only scruffy thing he did that lap. So this is nothing other. Oh, sorry. This is nothing. I just pulled a Jeansy.
Yes! Yes!
I just hit the mic in a very Jeansy-esque way. This is not to take anything away from Bottas, but Hamilton blew it.
I'm just coming down from Spanners taking my limelight of smashing the equipment. But yeah, so
you weren't listening, were you? Right.
No, I'm gone now.
Hamilton threw away any chance he had at beating a very good Bottas lap.
Yes. So, yeah, because he went off, he was very wide through turn 5-6 chicane. No, 7-8 chicane before going into the fast turn 9. He was wide coming out of turn 10. And then he was wide and all over the curb going into the right hander just before the final chicane. It was as messy as hell. So, even if he had all the power in the world, he wouldn't have been anywhere near Bottas. He was lucky to get second with that scruffy lap.
Sarah.
So one of the things I think when we're talking about Bottas 2.0 and all of that is that he's doing what Mercedes do best, which is when other people are dropping the ball, they pick it up and they're in place, ready to go, even if they're maybe not the favourites in the moment. And I think Bottas is fully entrenched in the team now because of this habit, he is the one picking it up when Lewis is dropping it. So
and that's dangerous territory, isn't it, for Hamilton? Because if Ferrari are dropping back, then essentially every race is not a battle for 25 points. As we saw with Rosberg in 2016, every race is a battle for 7 points, or now is a battle for an 8 or 6 point lead. So if anything does go wrong, he's got, you know, a big margin to catch up Jeansy.
See, I think that what we're going to have this year, I still think Lewis will win this championship if it's completely clean and down the line. I think if he does lose this championship, I think it'll be down to fastest lap points that costs him.
All right, Trumpet, something about tyres, pressures?
Yeah, in a move that may have not hurt Mercedes, Pirelli overnight dropped the rear pressures from 21.5 to 19.5 PSI. And the Mercedes generally do work better with the lower pressures in the tyres. They would certainly have done that based on all of the data they gathered, and not simply as a favor to Mercedes. But it might have also been something that didn't hurt them at all, at least relative to their competitors. And so that and that may have played into a certain extent how FP3 and qualifying went, because that would be a change the engineers would have had to deal with even at Mercedes. And it might have helped Bottas out in his efforts during qualifying as well.
Awesome. Well, Matt, the chat room's asking, and I am quite interested as well, how did you find watching the race on this occasion? Because F1 TV Pro was terrible for you last week in Baku, or last 2 weeks ago.
It was better this time. I did not have the same issues as I did with the broadcast from Baku, which was good. That would be it. It kind of worked as one would expect. It's not perfect, but it was pretty good this time around.
And I had to try and watch it on three different streaming methods, two of which I'd be willing to talk about, just to try and get a good picture, actually. I struggled internetting the race this time around.
Yeah, it can be difficult. I need to correct. I said 21.5. It was 20.5 originally. Thanks to Off Neil in the chat room for paying attention to my words, even when I don't.
Oh, was that the PSI? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Whew. Oh, we would have had egg on our faces. We would have had an email.
Everybody knows that.
We would have had an email, maybe. All right, mate. Stroll, again, doesn't get out of Q1 with a car that is capable of getting out of Q1. Have I won this argument with you yet, Matt?
He was 0.2 off Perez, if you'd like to know.
Okay, so just to clarify, which session was Perez in?
Perez made it to Q2, where he finished last, I think.
Okay, and Stroll was just above him in Q2, no? All right.
No. He finished 0.2 off in Q1, therefore did not advance.
Roger that.
I would say, though, because you put me in the position of having to do this every week, that being 0.2 off of your teammate in qualifying is in the realm of acceptable barely in Formula One. I mean, obviously it's not Haas, where they were 100th apart and best of the rest, but it's not as embarrassing as, like, you know, Stoffel being 0.8 off of Fernando, as we saw last year.
True. Jeansy.
It's okay. At least he went on to have a phenomenal race.
He was pivotal in the race. Are you kidding me?
I may or may not still have the sound effects from the quiz with Sean Kelly on. Do let us know how you got on with the quiz. You can tweet me at SpannersReadyTheShow, at MissedApexF1, or you can always email me spannersready@gmail.com.
I've been told by many people that how much I sucked at the quiz. I'm like, you don't need to tell me. I know. I was there.
It was really hard. I was like begging Sean, next time, dude, you've got to think of our reputations. We all look terrible. All right, look, let's move on to the race. And this is where we call upon Matt Trumpets to tell us where this race was won and lost.
Righto then. So I think there were three critical points in the race. The first, and almost always the place we start, is the start. And the start was critical because it determined who won. The second has to be the safety car restart. not so much for its effect when it happened, but for the pit sequencing that happened right before it. And last, I have to say the flat spot that Vettel got at the start had a huge run-on effect on Ferrari for the entire rest of the race, for the entire rest of the race. I don't believe they would have beaten either Mercedes, but it definitely changed their ability to compete with the Red Bulls.
Well, let's start at the beginning then. Sarah, not the best start for Bottas. We'll get onto the clutch issue in a moment. However, it was interesting that Hamilton said, all right, look, I'm never softballing in turn one again. This is fully game on.
Yeah, I think. And another point that happened during that his whole first stint was that apparently he wasn't talking at all. So he did the whole thing without a word, whereas Bottas was asking for updates fairly regularly. A lot of interesting talk about radio. We didn't hear much of the interesting radio, but a lot of interesting talk about it.
I think it's going to be a spoiler that my Missed Apex / Pony Award was going to go to Hamilton because of the radio. Because we heard from whoever the pit correspondent was, I think it was Paul Dresta this week, who was at Race Control for Sky TV, was saying, yeah, no, Hamilton's not saying anything. He's not saying anything. He's fully focused. And then at some point before the first pit stop, he's like, dude, I need information. Why aren't you guys talking to me? It's like, all right, we haven't heard anything from you at all. And now you're yelling at us. You're mean. This is what bullies do. But yeah, very, very interesting. But Matt, the fact is, Hamilton did kind of play a bit of a team game. Do you remember when we were talking about Rosberg and Hamilton coming together in various points? And you'd made the great point. Yeah, but the fact is they're teammates. Yes, that incident might be a racing incident, but they're teammates. And Hamilton was quite teamy in that he didn't push ultra hard through the first three turns. And Bottas was very, very good and very good in his defense. This wasn't going to happen this time ever, was it?
They were so close to disaster through turn one, because you had Vettel closing in, you had Bottas in the middle of the pincer, and as Hamilton came around, I don't think you could put 5 millimeters in between his rear wheel and Bottas' front wing through that turn. It was like terrifying to watch. I can't even imagine what Wolff was thinking at that point.
Jeansy, do you think that if Baku had not happened, if the big kind of challenge for Bottas hadn't been set, especially with the qualifying, do you think perhaps Lewis might have tightened up a little bit on that corner, left a little bit more room, because he was fully heading just for the turn two apex, which is the turn one exit, and wasn't all that concerned at all that Bottas had a Ferrari on his left?
He was much more alongside though today. And the thing is, it was always going to end up worse for Bottas than it would have done for Lewis, because Vettel was around the outside and he knew there was a Ferrari there. He didn't know which one, but he knew there was a Ferrari there. So he's gone in there. He knows Bottas has got to go wide. If Bottas is going to go into the red car, so be it.
And I got to say props to Bottas for recognizing that and getting out of it before all three cars were out of the race.
Bottas was very, very lucky. Bottas was very, very skilled to not drop it in the first corner as well, because he got a full swapper on. You know, if that was a number five red car, it would be going around in circles.
I mean, controversial, but yeah, all right.
Controversial, but probably quite accurate.
And this is the Vettel off the track entirely, but did you see the still picture that they put up after the race of Bottas with his arms completely 180'd at the moment that the tires lit up and the rear end just decided to go any way it wanted to? Yeah, and you would have thought, and I think you're absolutely right, that the car was just done for at that. There was no way he was going to be able to recover it, yet somehow he managed.
He was probably in that position where people have been in before, where you're in before, where you've gone full opposite lock and you're like, I'm going to spin. And then all of a sudden you're straight again. You're like, how did that happen? Okay, I've got a panic on what's going on next. He would have just instinctively reacted to that, put full opposite lock on, and all of a sudden he's not facing the wrong way and is still in second place, and have been like, whew, okay, I can wipe the brown out of my trousers and keep going.
But I am torn, because initially I thought, oh, this is actually the first slip we've seen from Bottas. But actually, this is an example of Bottas actually being fairly in control, and he has been in control all season, of himself at least.
I can't actually think of any mistakes Bottas has made.
That's what I was thinking. So when I saw him kind of have that tank slapper, I was like, well, that's actually the first sniff.
But that's not an error, though. Yeah. So, I mean, Erudite just made a comment and said, come on, guys, they all gave enough room. Yeah, they all gave just enough room. There was perfect racing room there. You know, we're talking cigarette paper, but it was still enough room. So for Bottas to not hit somebody, not drop it, and keep that facing the same way, that wasn't an error. That was just skill of a driver managing to keep it on the track, because that could have been a lot of his championship up in smoke.
Sarah, optimistic of Sebastian Vettel to think he could go around the outside of two cars and there would somehow be still room when they got to the apex of turn two?
Very optimistic, but at this point he's got to show that he's got the chops with Leclerc sort of following in his footsteps, following very close behind, them having to swap places all the time. He kind of had to do something, and a lot of the commentators were talking about him going down the right and following Hamilton instead, but I don't think that would have ended up any better.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because that's exactly where I wanted to go. I can't imagine second guessing someone in that tiny amount of time that he would have had to make that choice. And it was obvious, because Bottas moved over, that lane opened up for him. And he clearly had superior speed, I think, to either Mercedes. Had it worked out for him, he would have hung around the outside. Bottas would have backed out, and then it would have been him versus Hamilton through the next two turns. But he locked up the inside wheel into the turn, and then that was literally race over for him.
To be fair, coming from P3 on the grid, Vettel didn't really have much of a choice. Didn't really have much of a choice but to go left. Leclerc could have gone right, but as I think we're going to allude to in a minute, both Max and Leclerc were very intelligent through turn one.
Sarah, tell us about Max's more cautious approach alongside Leclerc, because he probably knew a little bit about the Red Bull car that we didn't, which is it was pretty quick.
It was pretty outstanding, in fact, all race long, I think. Whether he'd taken on board all the criticism he was getting last year and just stayed back, or what exactly is going on, but it was much more mature beginning to the race. But also being able to keep Leclerc in, you know, kind of keeping everyone around him honest. I think that's what he was doing.
And what was interesting about that, not just keeping him honest, but being smart enough to back out as the disaster ahead unfolded, because what wound up happening was that when Vettel rejoined the track, he cut very far across and caused Leclerc to check up, and that opened the outside lane with free air for Verstappen to just go around both Ferraris in basically one go. So it was a tremendous moment in terms of how the race turned out for him to have had, all right, I'm going to say it, the maturity to make that choice in that moment.
I mean, it was a maturity thing. It was a maturity thing for Max. I think what your race's instinct, what it tells you to do, is when you see three people going into one corner, you back off, because you're like, I don't know what's going to happen here. Is every likely that all three of them can wipe each other out and all of a sudden I inherit a lead? So him backing off was the right thing to do, because what it does, it gives him the ability to cut in tighter and get a better line on the exit of Q3, on the exit of turn three.
See, I know exactly what's going to happen when you see three wide into a turn. Alex is going to punt someone off a kart track.
I didn't punt anybody off. People got in my way, but I didn't punt anyone off.
Okay, I literally have video evidence that that's not the case. You hit a lot of people. You might call them racing incidents, but both you and Kyle hit a lot of people. So,
To be fair, I was trying to push David Hatton round turn one because he just wasn't going fast enough and Kyle was getting closer. I've had this conversation with David Hatton.
Poor David Hatton. On the video, if you look at the specific facility, you did just nudge him forward to put him offline and then sweep around the inside. That's not what we're talking about today. They can see it for themselves on the Missed Apex video. You've completely thrown me, you guys. But we're still in turn one. We're still in turn one, aren't we? So Vettel locks up and that ruins that set of tyres. But what we really have now is we have two battles emerging. We have Verstappen in third place, splitting up the battle of the two Mercedes, which we now believe is the battle for the championship. And then you've got the two Ferraris doing their own thing out of the back. But firstly, let's go out to the front, because last race in Baku, you said to me that actually Hamilton wasn't faster, didn't have more pace. It was Bottas was just cleverly managing that 0.00 whatever it was gap. Interesting then that Lewis Hamilton took a slightly different approach this time, Matt, and instead of a tiny minuscule gap that like Bottas was comfortably managing in Baku, he sort of boldly went all the way out to an 11 second gap and then a 5 second gap after the restart.
So help me out, are we comparing the beginning of this race to the end of the last race, or are we comparing beginning to beginning? Because I think if we were beginning, I think Bottas had a bit more of a gap.
Not 11 seconds, but okay, granted.
Yes, well,
I think you get what
how one manages one's gap is one's preference, whether one is faster or not. The difficulty comes in proving it if you don't pass someone on track. And that is where you and I differ in terms of the last race. I don't think it's possible to know Hamilton was ultimately faster because he didn't actually get round Bottas. Here, the same could be said, and you would be absolutely correct. There's no way to know that Bottas was faster. In fact, he probably wasn't, because he didn't get round Hamilton. He had his two, three push laps at the beginning. He was close, and then the gap went out, and then the gap just stayed there. And it seemed more of a management game for the Mercedes people up until we get to the safety car.
If Bottas had stuck sort of 4 to 5 seconds behind Lewis and matched his lap times, I'd say, yeah, he managed that gap, because that's the kind of gap you need to not kill your tyres and look after your car at Spain and be in striking distance for if the person in front makes a mistake. No one is managing their gap at 11 seconds behind somebody. Not a chance.
Trumpets has no further defence. So yes, we're correct. And Hamilton did have the pace in Baku. Sorry, I zoned out for a little bit, but did we accept that I was right 2 weeks ago? Was that the general gist of it, Matt?
Absolutely. That's completely what we did. Yeah.
Okay. But we are seeing Lewis Hamilton in typical form. So if we were looking at this last season, this is the sort of performance over Bottas that we would expect, that even if he was behind, he would somehow get ahead and then be comfortably up front. After qualifying, I had quite a few people get in touch with me over various sources, and I love that, thank you very much. But the general tone was, ha ha, Spanners, smiter of Bottas, what say you now? Ha ha. And a lot of very kind of attacking comments. Can I be clear? I don't think I've done Bottas down, particularly over the last couple of years when I've been talking about it. I think my only criticism of Bottas is that he's not as fast ultimately as his 5-time World Driver Championship teammate. I think he, for the records, I think he's a very good driver. I think he's very robust wheel to wheel. We often compliment his racing, Jeansy. When he gets wheel to wheel, he knows exactly what he's doing. He's just not quite as fast as Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah. And, you know, it's that whole thing of Lewis has this uncanny, has this reputation for making drivers look average, even if they're not, you know. And the ones that are, Kovalainen, he destroys their career. You know, Fernando Alonso destroyed Fernando Alonso's career. God, I'm going to get stick for that.
We don't have Spanish listeners. It's okay.
But yes, Bottas is a fine, fine racing driver. He's better than Seb. He's probably on a par with Leclerc at the moment. Leclerc will usurp him, but I don't know how much more Bottas has got to give. I think Leclerc and Max have so much further to go with their ability. Part of me feels that Bottas is at his maximum and you might get a little bit more out of him, but it's not like he's got another 3 or 4 levels to find like I feel Max and Leclerc do.
All right, well, let's finish off with how the race was won and lost, Matt, because just when you think the race was over, a couple of key things happen. Firstly, a few of the cars in the top six start positioning as if they're going to do an out-and-out two-stop. And then, of course, we do get the safety car eventually. Explain to me what the teams were thinking with the two-stop, because it looked like it was going to be a comfortable one-stop.
Well, the two-stop had already come up as the fastest strategy by Pirelli. Not by a lot, but by you know, but by a little, which meant that all the teams would probably want to do a one stop. But then you had Vettel with the flat spotted front tire, which led to the whole Ferrari who's going to let who buy drama that dragged on endlessly, which is great for TV shows and angst, but not so good when you're actually racing a car on a track. But him going to the two stop meant that he was now a bit of a joker in terms of how it affected the others' race strategy. And as it transpired, when we got to the safety car, he was approaching Verstappen, who was wedged in between him and Leclerc, who'd been stopped later and was looking to one stop. And you were beginning to think there was going to be a rock and a hard place with Verstappen in between, and there might be some excitement there. And then that's when we had the safety car, thanks to Stroll and Norris going off to play in the wall by themselves.
All right, well, we will definitely cover that in Whose Fault Is This? Don't worry. For people who are new to Missed Apex podcast, we have a section where we assign blame. You'll often hear the commentary going, well, I'll put that down to a racing incident. That's where everybody in the Missed Apex crew screams, no, we must assign blame. And assign blame we will, but not before we talk about Ferrari. Now, we've put to bed the theory that Nick Numbers Alexander being on this podcast causes Ferrari failures, although he has just messaged to protest that he is convinced that Ferrari would have done even worse had he appeared on the panel. But let's talk a little bit about those Ferrari tactics, Sarah, because we just don't know what's in the Ferrari management head, in their heads. And this has been a classic situation that we faced all season long, and you can't deny it's cost them time. Their blushes are only being spared in that they're not in that top fight. But really, I mean, they could have been ahead of Red Bull today if they'd not been scrapping amongst themselves.
Well, one of the big things that seems to be coming out of this is their intra-team communication seems to have fallen apart completely, and they don't know what they're doing in terms of how to tell what the other side of the garage is doing in terms of the two different engineering teams. The waiting so many laps to make a decision about any of these choices is just it. Doing nothing is not a strategy, and they just need it to be making these calls faster.
Jeansy, what say you? Ferrari. Ah, Trumpet, sorry, I got you mixed up. You both look exactly the same. You're both insulted. That was perfect.
Right. So the thing, interesting side note, I watched back, because of the Grosjean-Magnussen incident, several laps of Grosjean around the safety car, and I could not understand a single thing he said on the radio. And while I was browsing Twitter, someone had gone back and watched the early onboards from Leclerc, and apparently his engineers couldn't understand anything he was saying either, to the point where they were like, I'm sorry, I can't understand that. Because it does seem the engineers have a special ability to understand something that's just like, you know, or copy that, and you're like, what? But no, in fact, even the engineers were like, nah, sorry, mate, we're totally baffled there. Could you please repeat this? So there may have been some other radio issues. And I don't know, was there also just a lack of audio of team radio in general in the broadcast? Maybe there were some other radio problems making it worse.
Yeah, there is a lot less than there was last year. I think there's, because it has such a big effect on the drivers' PR over the past few years, I reckon they're dialing down on it a lot, because everyone's just getting slated for being a bit whiny when they're doing perfectly normal requests to their racing engineers.
To be fair, was it Steiner that said on the radio, stop whinging and just race, when Grosjean complained continually about being pushed off? Oh my. But that was a moment, I will say.
Well, let's look at the drivers who've come off worse in this sort of era of more radio comms. I know Alonso really felt like there was a picture being painted of him being like aggressive and emotional on the radio. But, you know, you'd have to say to Fernando, they didn't insert anything. You know, they didn't add any fake Alonso. That was all you, dude. Hamilton, if you just pick out, I guess, you know, some of his more passive-aggressive comments, and if you cherry-pick those, he comes across like a very, like he could have fit into Ricky Gervais's The Office quite easily. So, guys, can't help but notice that I'm second when I was previously first. Want to explain if you want, do you want to explain it? He's really passive aggressive. And Grosjean just has openly said, these radio calls make me seem or reveal how whingy I am. And we have pretty good inside information that is a fair reflection of Grosjean, don't we, Matt?
Yeah, we do. And it is a fair, but as fun as it is, you just got to feel for someone who's strapped into a car, moving that fast, trying to push all those buttons and do all those things, and having to deal with what amounts to like mom and dad complaining over your shoulder constantly about everything you do.
Sarah.
Sort of coming back to the Ferrari strategy part of that, though, yes, there was an element about the team, the comms with the drivers, but I think it's just in between the teams because it sounded like they didn't know what strategy their drivers were supposed to be on.
Well, you had one engineer telling one of the drivers that they're on the same strategy, one of the drivers telling them they're on a different strategy, and they let them pass. They were completely disagreeing with each other. So it's like, because you normally see the engineer either side of Toto normally on the pit wall, and then the instructions come from Toto to the rest of the team. I don't get it. Ferrari are an absolute joke at the moment.
Yeah, and we have slated Mercedes in the past for not having separate strategists to optimize each driver. But the flip side of that is that when coordination is needed for team purposes, you do not have the same sort of goat rodeo happening between the different engineers and size of the garage.
We're all going to just pretend that goat rodeo is a perfectly valid thing to start. We're just going to brush right on past that. So at this goat rodeo, Matt, what we saw up front was Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas quite likely both being told to manage their tyres together. They were probably both being given information. I heard Bottas being told the first stint the tyres were on the limit. So like you really use those tyres up. We heard Lewis Hamilton saying, oh, a little bit dodgy, a little bit ropey getting these tyres to the end. We saw big delamination on the rear right of Lewis Hamilton's. So if you had separate strategists in that situation and you were Bottas, you were Team Bottas, you'd be doing everything to try and get Hamilton to pit. So you'd be going on about how you were really struggling. You know, you'd throw curveballs out there. You'd go, yeah, I'm really, my tyres are dead. I'm going to come in any minute. And then as soon as Hamilton pitted, you would go on your merry way. And that would have risked putting Hamilton, you know, in the clutches of Red Bull or Ferrari if they'd have been closer. But that's the kind of chaos you get if you have different strategists. So what's going on at Ferrari? Do they have two different guys talking to the drivers?
Yeah, I think they do in the sense that they look to optimize the results for the drivers. And they don't assume a great deal of coordination is necessary. And in this case, it costs them probably 2 seconds plus for Vettel in his flat spot in the beginning. And again, at the end, when Vettel had caught up to Leclerc and had the faster tire, again, it cost him time before they let him through. Of course, it was irrelevant because the safety car came out and collapsed everything, but it reduced his ability to chase down Verstappen before that happened.
All right, we'll get back to the Ferrari team orders and politics situation, but I'm wondering if anyone thinks that Hamilton was a little bit saved by that safety car, Jeansy, because that gap was starting to creep down, and I don't know what state Bottas's tyres were in, but Hamilton looked to be in a little bit of trouble. It had come down from like 11, it had sat at 8 when he came on and was going, hey, guys, tell me what lap times he's doing behind. And then it was creeping down, you know, into a 7-point gap. It is possible that if he was delaminating that quickly, mate, he could have been in some trouble.
I think that they were planning a second stop for Lewis, for both Mercedes anyway. So I don't think that would have been too much of a problem. Lewis always at this stage in a race, when you're sort of 2/3 into a race, Lewis always starts to back off a little bit and lets the gap come down a little bit, or takes his foot off the throttle, turns the engine down and goes into engine reserve mode, and then would have probably been rather miffed that the safety car came out to be like, oh God, I've got to get back on it again, especially because of how slow that safety car went.
Oh, hang on. I'm getting a bit confused, Matt. Did Bottas pit before the safety car?
Yeah, the timing of it was he pitted the lap before the safety car.
Ah, right.
And then as Lewis was going around, that's when the safety car was out. So he was able to actually pit under the safety car. But it was, that decision had been made prior to
okay.
the car coming out.
Right, let's get back to Ferrari after a word from our sponsors.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Back to Ferrari. Who should they be backing at the moment? Sarah, who would you be backing if you were the new Ferrari management? They've got a bit of a conundrum. Basically, if Vettel has anything but an optimal race pace and strategy, Leclerc is right there. They seem to be reasonably well matched. They're seesawing around each other. I mean, what do you do? For me, you've still got to respect the fact that one of them is a four-time world champion and one of them is in his second season, presumably with a much lower paycheck.
I think if you're Ferrari management, you need to be thinking about the future. And Seb's now one of the oldest drivers on the track. Yes, he's the most experienced, but he's also spent the most time doing unintended spins. Compared to, I know Leclerc's made some errors and some mistakes, but he's the one they need to invest in for the future.
Yeah, so to me, it's not a question of who do Ferrari ultimately back. If it's push, then Vettel is the person you back. He's got the experience, and he's got the knowledge, and he has the pedigree of having won a championship. You can say Leclerc is the future. Leclerc also drove into a wall in Baku. He's young. He makes mistakes. I'm sorry. Where Ferrari are falling down, I think, strategy-wise, is when the choices are obvious. Vettel is slow. Leclerc is fast due to reasons. They dither making that choice and getting Leclerc in front. And when Vettel says, as a four-time world champion, you must get me off this tire immediately, I'm losing hunks of time, and then they wait four more laps to do it, then there's just the decision chain is taking too long to run through its process, given the speed at which the race happens.
So Nick Alexander in the chat room obviously can't win comment of the week, but has just said, Sarah says Ferrari needs to think about the future. Oh, you must be new here. Must say that Nicky is a Ferrari fan. But Jeansy, what did you make of it?
To be fair, we can forget individual race strategies for the minute for the past five races. They made their biggest faux pas when they said before the season even started that they're going to back Seb. Just let the guys race. That's what Mercedes have done since the hybrid era. And we've seen some of the best intra-team rivalries we've seen with a team that can still dominate. So as long as they don't hit each other, they can still fight.
Oh, hang on. Sorry, I've got a bit of a phone call for you. Oh, it's Sochi 2018 on the phone for you, Jeansy. Do you want to answer it?
But it's that whole case of, you know, they need to stop saying, oh, we're going to back Seb because he's the old. They've given themselves a fright because they've employed a young driver and they don't do that. I can't remember the gap, but it's been decades since they've had a young driver, such an inexperienced driver in that second seat. And I think they've scared themselves into the fact that, oh God, we've got this guy, Sebastian Vettel, who's a four-time world champion. We might upset him by putting another young rookie up against him.
Do you know what? I know a family that got in a very young, attractive Swedish au pair full-time living in their house. What did they think was going to happen? It's like you've brought Leclerc in, who you think is an incredibly fast young driver. Did you think he was just going to sit there behind Vettel? Did you seriously think that he was going to be so off the pace and that Vettel is so good that you weren't going to have this problem this year? Which, like you said, Jeansy, it makes it a bizarre choice that they came right out, closed their options off and said, Vettel's our number one driver.
They're going to do one of two things: completely destroy their season, and five races in, it looks like they're doing that, or completely destroy Charles Leclerc to the point where he'll either just drop off the face of the planet, lose his confidence and not be very good, or be the fighter that I actually think he is, drop his Ferrari contract and probably go to any other team, because Red Bull would have him, Mercedes maybe have him, but you know, he's got that ability where he could go anywhere. And Ferrari got to be careful. Just let the guys race. I mean, we talk about strategy. Red Bull went really aggressive on their strategy today. To go soft, soft, medium, is what Ferrari yeah. should have done in the last couple of races. They've had the, exactly with Leclerc in Baku. They should have put him on a aggressive strategy from the very start and forced the pit stops. But Ferrari just don't do that. There's too long a chain of command before the actual decision gets made.
Okay, so Marcio says they didn't say Vettel is our number one driver spanners. Okay, I think the wording was we have our number one and number two driver sorted, and everyone has inferred that that is Vettel. I think you'd be hard pushed to imply anything else, that they were actually going, haha, but secretly we've decided Leclerc is our new number one. I don't think that's the case. Right, we're going to go to Red Bull and their aggressive strategies and them being in the mix. But first, we have to play a game.
Whose fault is it?
Oh, that was such a smooth segue, as smooth as Harry's razors on my skin, harrys.com/apex. So the only whose fault is this of note is between Stroll and Norris. There is a Haas one as well, but let's start with Stroll versus Norris. Jamesy, let's let you have first crack. They called it a racing incident on the telly. I was yelling. I was like, oh, Phil Potts going to be feeling the force on this one.
As my phrase that I coined that you stole, he violated the lane system all over his face.
Yeah.
So he Norris was around the outside and Stroll just turned like he wasn't there. Well, it was funny. I knew it was Stroll's fault when I just saw them in the wall and I hadn't actually seen the incident.
I get a lot of abuse for being hard on Stroll, but in my defense, that is because he's done quite a lot of mediocre/terrible things, and that has continued this weekend. However, Matt, you've said to me in the past, look, if there's a car there, you can't turn because there's a car there.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you could make a case, and actually, I think I did in my report, that it was basically a heaping amount of stupid and there was plenty to go around for both parties. But at the end of the day, Norris kept his nose in for no real reason whatsoever.
Oh, Jeansy's going to have words.
And Stroll thoughtlessly decided that he wasn't going to be there in any event and just chopped right into him on the apex. So, you know.
As we have seen over the years, you can go two cars wide through that corner. So Norris had all the right to keep his nose in there, because the thing is even if Stroll had given him the room, he could have hung him out to dry through turn three. But it was negligence as far as I'm concerned from Stroll's point of view. He's like, oh, Norris isn't going to hang, you know, this young kid in a faster car coming around the outside of me, he's not going to keep his nose in. Come on.
Do you remember that time in iRacing, Jeansy? Yeah, where you're like, oh, come on, he's not going to try and take up the racing line on me after he beat me through the corner at Lime Rock and he was faster than me in the race anyway. And then you wound up in the wall.
Spanners isn't that? A Formula One driver who's had three seasons in Formula One. Come on.
Now people are kind of mixed in the chat room, actually, and saying, you know, well, does Norris have a right to keep his nose in? What is the point where you say, I have to back out? As far as I understand it, there is no point you have to back out. If you're there, and I think he didn't just suddenly appear there. He was alongside Sarah, wasn't he? He was alongside going into turn one, and he was still alongside into turn two. It's not like he'd just beat him on the brakes and got in. I mean, so Stroll, he's aware that he's been there, and he's just turned in, hasn't he?
He should be aware. However, the only thing I would say is in the three times that Grosjean was trying to overtake the same spots, he left the track at almost around the exact point where those two came together. So is that just not like, should, is it a bit like Ocon and Verstappen, where actually Verstappen should have backed off a little bit and not gone for one of those spaces, because then he wouldn't have had the incident and he would have carried on. Is this just inexperience on Norris's part, as much as I do want to say it's Stroll's fault, because it kind of is?
So I will put a real question to you there, Jeansy, if I may. Like, when I look at where Norris was relative to Stroll, I didn't see much chance for him to be able to get round that particular lap. And that being the case, why leave your nose there where somebody can hit it? That's what occurs to me when I see that incident. Now, if you're asking me to assign blame, that's a different question. But this is the real question. You've had more racing experience than me. At what point do you say, look, it's not really on. Why am I here? Isn't it better to set up for the next corner?
You're asking the wrong person. Jeansy's never pulled out of an overtake, I don't think.
Okay, sorry. Never mind.
Yeah, go on.
So Spain is so hard to overtake round. So if he's got a sniff of a chance of getting round someone, especially like Stroll, you are going to take it. Because if he didn't make it stick that lap, he might have been stuck there for the rest of the race. And I don't know where they were when they had the incident. I don't know if points were in the offing, but he was round the outside. And that is one of those corners where you can go round the
outside.
Okay,
well, Jeansy, Vignesh in the chat room says Stroll had the racing line. If you're the car on the outside, do you have the right to just take the racing line? That's, I don't know. I'm genuinely asking.
This goes back to iRacing.
This is not a loaded question. Why must you think?
Not at all, Spanners.
That all, I remember everything.
When you're actually racing wheel to wheel, the racing line, who's on the racing line is almost irrelevant, because if somebody is taking up space where your racing line is going to be, you can't just pull across them. If we take the lane system, they had to stick to their lanes. Norris was in a lane and his nose was well up the inside of Stroll's rear wheels. Stroll cannot come across. That's just the way it is. Forget racing lines. It's not important.
The counter argument, though, is, Matt, isn't it, is that Norris didn't finish the race and Grosjean did, because Grosjean kept taking that escape route.
Yeah, absolutely. And personally, if you're going to ask me to blame somebody, I'm going to blame Vijay Mallya.
Go on.
For being a criminal and losing the team, because if he was still in charge, Ocon would have been driving. And this never, ever would have happened. Sorry, but there it is.
Oh, my God. All the allegedlies. Every
alleged criminal.
Guys,
yes.
Can you send in your allegedlies to spannersready@gmail.com? Because I think I'm going to need everyone. So if we could just pool all our allegedlies together, that would be fantastic. All right. Let's move on to Red Bull. Red Bull looking strong. Red Bull turned up here, Matt, with a B-spec car. Would you like to accuse them of any crimes, or just go straight to perhaps, you know, discussing the effect that B-Spec had? Oh, and by the way, breaking news, Gasly didn't have the same upgrades that Verstappen had this week.
Actually, I would, because I think there's a very interesting tale. A Twitter user called Ari, A-U-R-Y, DB9, put together this chart of the slow speeds and turns in Barcelona. And you may be thinking, why is that interesting? Well, I'm about to tell you why. If we look at turn 5, we see that Vettel's slow speed in that turn was 108 and Verstappen's was 113 compared to Bottas at 116. If we move down a little bit, we see that in turn 15, Vettel's speed was 99, Verstappen's was 104, and Bottas was 100. And was there one more? Yes, here we go. Turn 7, Vettel 162, Verstappen 172, Bottas 174. So if we're going to talk about how chassis is performing at circuit, it looks like Red Bull's chassis upgrade is doing the business, because they are actually now closer to Mercedes in these slow speed turns than Ferrari is.
Good. And I understand the implications of all of that. So I definitely wasn't consulting the legal team for advice. But certainly, Sarah, if we've got Red Bull healthily in the mix, I think this kind of spells the end for Ferrari's title challenge. Because I think Ferrari, instead of looking forward, will be turning backwards to defend from Red Bull. And now they find themselves in races where they're covering off against Red Bull instead of challenging Mercedes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Gasly's starting to find his feet a bit more. I mean, he's not coming out there with the Verstappen levels of performance, obviously, but he was showing a lot more punchy moves, especially after the safety car. He put a few moves on Vettel, didn't ultimately come off, but that puts the two drivers in a very strong position compared to the start of the season. So I think it's going to be, I think Red Bull are going to be aiming for second in the championship this year.
Can you explain to me, though, how come Verstappen covered off Vettel? I was quite surprised. So Vettel's obviously flat spotted his tyres, and then Verstappen comes in. It just didn't feel like they were under any threat from Ferrari or from Vettel particularly. Matt, then?
Yeah, because again, Red Bull understood who they were racing. They were racing Ferrari. Ferrari didn't apparently understand who they were racing. They were racing Red Bull, but specifically Verstappen. And I think this led to, this is like they're just pointed at the wrong target. They were never going to catch Mercedes in this race. And they knew it. They should have known it. And they should have been watching Verstappen and thinking about how their strategy impacted their race with Verstappen, and not given any concern to the Mercedes after about the first lap when Vettel failed to get in between them.
I totally called it, Jeansy, on the Twitters. I said, cheeky punt on Verstappen to get a podium, because they do look good. And like you say, they are not scared to go for an aggressive strategy. So when they bolted on a tyre that meant, no, we have to pit again, they just were signalling to the world, right, we are messing with you now. We are a factor. We're going for it. It's up to you whether you respond or not.
Yeah, they called their card really early, which was fantastic to hear and fantastic to see. And Max is the type of driver that will pull that kind of strategy off. And Matt's right in what he says, where he says Red Bull knew they were racing Ferrari. I don't think Ferrari knew who they were racing at all, whether they were racing Stroll or each other or Arriva Bene, who's not even there anymore. There's a famous phrase that I said before we went live from Days of Thunder about a monkey doing something with a football, which is exactly what it seems like Ferrari are doing.
Yeah, goat rodeo, innit, Matt? Am I right? Goat rodeo. Yeah,
total goat rodeo.
That's what it's all about. Any other business? Formula B won by Kevin Magnussen in the Haas, Matt. A really punchy performance from him. I feel like Grosjean kind of had the measure of him pace-wise, but Magnussen's like, nope, out of my way. And Grosjean's all like, oh man, I nearly made contact, so I'll leave the track.
Yeah, well, this made the whole last part of the race so very, very exciting and, you know, kind of soul-destroying if you're a Haas fan, because there they were, 7th and 8th. Nice haul of points. They would have been in 5th place had they pulled off the 7-8 bifecta, I guess you would call it. And then Magnussen and Grosjean get a little bit punchy. Grosjean gets the great toe down the straight, or Magnussen gets a great toe down the straight, and Grosjean, inexplicably to me, leaves the inside of the track wide open for him. Magnussen's like, okay, bruh, here I go. And up he goes, and Grosjean, and I watched both onboards to be sure, Grosjean absolutely comes over on him, bounces off the tire, because Magnussen is far, far ahead. It's rear tire Magnussen, front tire Grosjean. This sends him wide, but he manages to get round the bollard and back onto the track without losing a spot. Follows him for 2.5 laps, tries the same move, and it's equally fail-tastic. Goes off again. This time he hits like the little yellow safety curb, bounces up in the air, and now the next lap, here comes Kvyat. Boom, right by him, because he's gotten his tires dirty and he's losing traction. 2 laps later, here comes Sainz. Same thing. He leaves the inside open. Sainz comes up. They bounce. He goes wide. His tires are dirty, and you can just see him squirming around. And he winds up scoring a single point, thankfully for him, because it's his first one of the season. But you got to scratch your head sometimes. Got to scratch your head sometimes at what is going on in his head in these moments. He could have brought it home in eighth place. It would have been better for him.
Jeansy, is it as simple as, Grosjean seems like quite a nice bloke and Magnussen just isn't? Is it as simple as that?
K-Mag put on a perfect display of defensive driving today when they were fighting against each other. It was a really, really good showing from him, and Grosjean didn't. He just left himself wide open in various different situations, and he was never coming off well. He was clever enough not to want to have a crash. That's why he kept bailing and taking the, I say, easy route. He's got to have a bad back after hitting that speed bump several times. And to be fair, the damage that speed bump was done to his floor would have been another factor to why he just completely fell off a cliff.
You're talking about Magnussen's defensive driving. A lot of the time, he seemed to be like defending when no one was actually going down the inside. And so you can imagine the car behind going, hey, K-Mag, it's cool. I'm not attacking. And K-Mag's like, no, but really, no, honestly, you're not passing. Like, just see what I'm doing here and take that as a nunshell pass.
Because what he's doing is he's saying, if you want to go around me, you're going around the outside. And he's forcing them into that position because he can still, because even if they get alongside him,
you can then stroll them, can't you, into turn two?
He can still come back. He can still come back across to them, not hit them, obviously. And he's obviously very good on the brakes because he was braking very, very late into turn one and made it very, very difficult. You know, it's a very classic move to say, right, I'm here. You are going where I want you to go. I'm moving early to make sure that you're going in the position where I want you.
Imagine.
He knew what he was doing. It was very clever. And my respect level has gone up a little bit for K-Mag this weekend.
I'm just imagining, Matt, what if Haas like ever get in the title mix? It's chaos, isn't it? Because you've got a fast driver who's a little delicate and jumpy and will leave his foot in. Was it last year where he left his foot in trying to get back on track? And then you've got K-Mag, who is quick enough, probably not ultimately as fast as Grosjean, but just carnage. Like, he is as Verstappen-y as Verstappen, isn't he? I like both those drivers, and I like Haas.
Yeah, it is true. And we're seeing this dynamic play out right now in real time at the team, because you know Steiner has got to be on edge. Because Grosjean, in terms of development and in terms of flat-out speed, I think brings it to the team and is very useful. But man, he's just like a point black hole for someone with that much talent. And this is problematic when you're battling in the midfield.
It's his consistency that's a problem. He's a fast driver. There's absolutely no doubting that. But he can't be consistent. That's where K-Mag's beating him. I wouldn't say K-Mag is necessarily faster than Grosjean, but he's a hell of a lot more consistent. I can't actually put my finger on a time I've seen K-Mag actually make a mistake on his own without a problem. I haven't really seen him crash into anybody apart from that incident with Nico Hülkenberg, but I can't even remember the incident, so it couldn't have been that bad. He's aggressive. Nothing wrong with being aggressive, but in those situations, I'm not like, oh God, K-Mag, you end up in a wall. You put Grosjean in the same situation, it's like, oh God, who's Grosjean going to hit? Is there going to be a safety car now because Grosjean's involved in a scrap? You don't get that with Greg, who came back.
Lewis Hamilton wins the Spanish Grand Prix with Valtteri Bottas in second place and the Red Bull getting ahead of the Ferraris for third. Mentioned in dispatches, perhaps both Toro Rosso drivers, Albon and Kvyat, being very punchy. Alfa Romeo, unfortunately, nowhere, and Renault continuing their indifferent season. People seem to be quite mixed on Renault. It's like the question, should you cut a pizza with a pizza roller cutty knifey thing or with scissors? Obviously with scissors, because if you do it with the pizza rolly thing, you can never quite tell, Matt, if you've gone all the way through and then you just end up ripping the bread. It's a whole mess.
Just use a plasma cutter. No problems.
Okay, I'll get hold of one right now. It's time for the awards, Jeansy. First of all, let's start with you. Would you cut a pizza with scissors or one of those blunt circle knives?
So I generally use a pizza cutter.
Why?
But I got bought as a present once the pizza scissors, and they're horrible, and I don't like using them. I can say that.
If you're wrong about that, How can we trust anything else?
My first job was Pizza Hut. I know how to cut a pizza. And also, if you're struggling to know if you've gone through the pizza dough, you're not buying expensive enough pizzas because your dough's not crispy enough.
Oh, touche. Love it. Although you are kind of putting down Mrs. Spanner's homemade pizza crust there. I'll let you deal with the fallout of that one.
She doesn't listen, so it's fine.
Nope, doesn't listen to anything I do. Jeansy, imagine if she did. My marriage wouldn't last a second. Jeansy, who would you give your thing of the weekend to? That's the good award. Hang on, I've sort of got a... We could use the correct sound from the... That's the correct sound from the quiz. So who's your thing of the weekend?
Lewis's start. That was phenomenal. I mean, it was so good, I thought it was a jump start. I thought I saw him roll before the lights, and he just launched it. Whether Bottas's poor start made it look better, but whenever I watch the start, I'm always looking at Lewis. I don't know if everyone knows I'm a Hamilton fan. I don't know if it's known, but yeah, I'm a bit OC. I watch Lewis at the start because I always worry about Lewis's starts. They're either epic or rubbish. And this one, he just launched, and I was just like, that's an awesome start. He's going to lead in turn one.
Okay, I'll stop it now. Sorry. Trumpets, who's your thing of the weekend?
It's got to be Kevin Magnussen in the Haas with the update. And I'll tell you why. He finished only 100th behind his admittedly faster teammate. And they were 6/10 clear in qualifying of the next closest midfield team, and only 3/10 back of Gasly. They seem to have found when they can get the tires to work properly, which is not a guarantee, and not a guarantee at Monaco, they seem to have found their own little place. And it's nice to see a midfield team get that close to the sharp end.
Fantastic. Sarah Nicol, media guru, helps me whenever Missed Apex need anything vaguely media related, for which I thank you. Who gets your thing of the weekend award? And we should say that we can follow you on Twitter, Sarah, by following at Decoding Dragons, because you are a dungeon person.
Yes. I'm an occasional nerd, but I also, you know, speaking of sharp things, the other thing with one of those pizza cutter things, if you get a sharp one, that's also really, really helpful.
They never last, do they? And then if you try and sharpen them against a stone, they just roll. It's useless. So let's go on to your thing of the weekend, though.
So my thing of the weekend is actually going to be Daniel Kvyat, because there weren't that many overtakes on track, relatively speaking. And he did a beautiful one, who I can't remember who it was on now, but because I was so incensed that it got called out as being Alexander Albon's time. And it was so beautiful. And then I was sitting there going, but I thought Alex was like seventh, and this is Kimi Raikkonen, who's right. It was Raikkonen right down the back.
Yeah.
But I just thought it's been a good solid race for him. And I think he deserved, you know, he's come in, he's actually beaten his teammate, and I think he's doing really well.
Fiat was awesome today. He was overtaking everybody today. He did some fantastic moves. And that move around the outside round turn, you don't go around the outside round turn four. That was stunning. To be fair, I was guilty. I saw a Toro Rosso and I assumed it could only be Alex Albon because it's not off the track. So I like Fiat. I think he's a lovely lad, but his racing has something to be questioned. But not today. He was phenomenal.
No, I mean, he's going to get sacked at any moment, but, you know, the hope's never finished with Kvyat, because he could come back as well. So it's fine. We don't need to feel sorry for him. But yes, let's give him credit where it's due. And I'm going to go up the Red Bull ladder for my thing of the weekend. Just Red Bull in general. It's a few races late, for sure, but they do seem to have come and come with a package that means business. Obviously, we're all going to line up around Monaco now, where they are strong. So if they can get good qualifying positions, they might be able to stay near the front of the parade. But it will be interesting in Canada, won't it, Matt? Can their upgrades really show something in Canada, where you need a bit of grunt and a bit of traction and a bit of down that long straight? Can they overtake people before the wall of champions? I'm optimistic that this is a real step forward.
Yeah, I think it is an absolute step forward for them. And if Honda continue to keep pace, they could usurp the second position that Ferrari occupy by default right now if Ferrari do not get their house in order.
All right, let's do the bad thing award.
Oh, no, you missed the apex.
Jeansy, if I was to ban everybody from picking Ferrari, are you all going to riot? Have you all just said Ferrari? Have you gotten any non-Ferrari missed the apexes for me then?
Yeah, mine's completely superficial. What the hell were those trophies? They were hideous. And the constructors one was marginally nice than the drivers one. It was red plastic, for crying out loud. This is Formula One. I'd planned this before the show and forgotten and actually then didn't do it. But I've got a trophy in my trophy room, which is the downstairs loo, and it's better than the F1 trophy.
If you've got anything that you were going to do but then didn't do, email me at spannersready@gmail.com.
Is that not his new tagline? I've got this thing for the show, but I've forgotten to do it.
It can't all be goat rodeos. But yeah, the plastic trophies at the Missed Apex Karting event, obviously I have to supply trophies and there isn't a huge trophy budget. So I do go down to Timpson's and I go, oh, you know, how far can I stretch? And I awarded the third and fourth most expensive trophy that Timpson's had to offer. So that was £9.95 and £12. So it did really burst the bank there. Matt, who missed the apex for you?
Renault.
Yeah, okay, go into detail. But yeah, always. I mean, Renault is everybody's 10th favourite team, aren't they?
Yeah, well, the thing is, I wouldn't have a problem with Renault had they not shown up with like the largest midfield budget, with all kinds of pretensions to be, we will be a manufacturer.
That is pretty racist. I'm going to have to edit that out.
Yeah. It's okay. Just my attempt at a French accent.
No, it was terrible. Okay, you know, carry on. Alienate some more of our audience.
Yes, well, you know. And then they turn up with their update at Barcelona, and they've been mixing it. They've been scrappy, and we've seen some steps forward. And then they're nowhere. They're nowhere at the testing track with their updates that are supposed to put them solidly into fourth and chasing Red Bull, who is a customer team, or who was formerly a customer team of their power unit, but not even McLaren, who wound up doing quite a good job with that same power unit.
I mean, they showed some pace in quali. Danny Rick got into Q2, got into Q3. So there is, I think there's some inherent pace in that car that they just need to unlock. And I think they're struggling to unlock it. And they still look like they're struggling under braking. Lots of lockups from them through practice. A few lockups through messing up in qualifying. We didn't get to see it in the race, but I can't assume it just went away in the race. I think they've got a few issues, but I think there's potentially inherent pace in that car. Whether they'll unlock it this year, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I guess if you look at the bright side, none of their engines blew up.
That is incredibly faint praise. But okay, we'll roll with that. Sarah Nicol. Oh, in fact, we should say that if you're a fan of smutty books, or your wife is, then I guess that's the kind of thing we sell. It can't all be. I know I'm always going on about Harry's razors, but that's because of the ergonomically weighted handle. But sometimes we've got to talk about Matt's wife and her penchant for writing smutty books.
Yes, we do. At A Weaver Writes, go find her, Amanda Weaver, on your favorite ebook seller. She's got a new book that's about to drop from Carina Press. And I can let slip that she's been touching up her Formula One series and right. It might be back out.
You've been a liability this week, honestly. Like, bring back Nick Alexander quickly. Right.
He's been a liability on a show that I'm on.
Yeah, I know. Right. So what was the book called again, Matt? The Formula One one? It's going to be a Formula One book. About sexy
the Formula
times.
One book she's working on is going to be submitted again to some publishing houses. I just thought I would tease that for people. But the one that's about to be out is Love and the Laws of Motion.
You all right there, Sarah? How's it going?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Holding up okay.
I'm totally fine.
Good. What is your Missed Apex Award this week?
Well, seeing as I can't have the Ferrari, I'll go for... we'll be going for Racing Point. What? Just nowhere. Like,
a real shame.
The entire time. Like, Perez was, what, 13th in the end?
Not good. Jeansy?
To be fair, you don't say Racing Point, you say Perez, because Stroll is always nowhere. So Perez was nowhere, so that means there's a problem with Racing Point. It was a shame. They just were nowhere. You know, for Perez to not even get in the middle of Q2, let alone and being at the back of Q2, it's a shame. Real shame, because they should be good.
My Missed Apex Award and Pony Award goes to Lewis Hamilton. The pony button's not working. But the behaviour behind the safety car, like, dude, I feel you, because I know that you've just lost like an 7-point lead at that point. And I know the whole pack is behind you now, that you had miles off in the distance. But Jeansy, he got so close to that safety car, heart in your mouth time, and then was quite pony-ish on the radio.
Well, the first time he got close, the camera cut as he was like underneath the bumper of the safety car. I'm like, oh my God, Hamilton just hit the safety car.
I was very unhappy.
He has a tendency to get very close to the safety car generally.
He was angry. He was angry, legit.
But he was annoyed, and he knows how difficult it is to keep temperature in the tyres. But it was going really slowly, though. It didn't look like it was being pushed around that circuit. It looked like it was being driven around to let the rest of the field catch up. They've got to do something. They need a faster safety car. With F1 cars getting quicker and quicker and quicker, you can't have a slightly beefed up road car as a safety car. It's got to be something that's a bit quick that they can still just turn on and go.
Imagine, because that's us watching it, imagine being his mum and watching that. You'd be like, Lewis, no, just give it some space, for goodness sake. Yeah. Any ponies? Any other ponies, anyone? Or goats? You've got a Daddy, I Want a Goat award, Matt?
I would have to go with Grosjean for his immense ponying after the safety car.
Absolutely. Thank you very much to my panel, Matt Trumpets, my podcasting brother in arms, Alex Jeansy Van Jean, who, I mean, if you search Alex Van Jean on any social media, that's him. There are no others. And Sarah Nicol, you can find by searching Decoding Dragons on Twitter. We will be back for a Sunday show, which will be news and a Monaco preview. We are also going to be covering the new W Series with our new podcast, Sarah, Missed Apex W Series.
Yeah, that's been a lot of fun so far because Bradley joined you on the last two episodes, along with Sarah Bovey, who's the reserve driver for the W Series.
No, on the first episode, I had BBC's Ellen Ellard joining me, speaking to Sarah Bovey, who is the first reserve for the series. So if anyone drops out, Sarah Bovey jumps in there. And she was right up the pack in first practice as well. So she looks like she's getting up to speed nicely. So do tune into that. Also, catch up with Matt and Chris talking about electric car racing. They cover the Monaco E-Prix, I believe, on Tuesday, Matt, with a live stream.
I believe that is the plan, although in typical fashion, we have yet to confirm it.
And for patrons, you can catch up with me and Matt whenever we do our next Patreon podcast, Wafflecast. Until we see you again, remember that wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. Hit it, Bjorn. All right, Alex, I hit the mic twice and you only hit the table a few times. So I'm going to count
the table once.
I'm going to count that as a victory.
Yes!
I'm going to count that as a victory to you. Fantastic. I actually enjoyed that race and I didn't have the benefit. And I didn't have the benefit of all the social media. So I didn't have people telling me it was boring or terrible or telling me what to think.
Comment or race in 60?
Well, I thought we'd finished. No, do you know what? I genuinely love comment of the week, right? So tell you what, do tell me, because our chat room is fantastic and you can join them by going to YouTube and searching for Missed Apex Podcast. It's not because I don't love you. Stop. Oh my God, look at all the comment. Yeah, all right. God, don't need to be mean about it. What's the comment of the week?
Race it 100 seconds.
All right, comment of the week. Boy, we had some very, very honorable mentions, but I've nibbled it down to four, I believe, starting with Michael Dieselhoff. Yeah, point for Grosjean. At least now he gets to eat. Thank you for the shout-out to the Netflix series, Base Valley. Kubica on radio just now. Quote, I did not know Spain was a night race. Ouch. Paul Young, how does it work that Daddy's Wallet F1 Point have more money and are less competitive? Which might have been a question, but I took it for a comment. And finally, our old friend European telling us that Renault is now launching a new line of gravel mowers.
Well, who's the winner of this week's comment of the week, Matt Trumpets?
Ooh, I think the winner will have to be Base Valley. Kubica on radio just now, quote, I did not know Spain was a night race.
Comment of the week.
I definitely get it, but while I figure that out, why don't you tell us what happened in just 60 seconds?
Lights out. Great start. Hamilton. Hamilton and Bottas. Vettel and Hamilton. Three wide. Vettel to lock up. Verstappen gets Leclerc. Verstappen gets Vettel. Vettel flat spot. Vettel lets Leclerc go. Vettel pits. Verstappen pits. Gasly pits. Leclerc pits for the hard tire. Bottas pits. Hamilton pits. It's not going to be all pits, really. I promise. Vettel catches Leclerc. Vettel pits again. Verstappen pits. Everyone pits. Toro Rosso forgets their wheels. Stroll hits Norris' safety car. Restart. Gasly and Leclerc. Magnussen on Grosjean. Magnussen gets Grosjean. Grosjean wide. Magnussen on Gasly. Gasly defends. Grosjean and Magnussen. Magnussen defends. Grosjean wide. Again. Kvyat gets Grosjean. Sainz on Grosjean. Grosjean wide. I sense a theme here. Sainz gets Grosjean. Also sense a theme here. Albon doesn't get Grosjean. Checkers. Hamilton wins. Grosjean gets a point. Renault?
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.